Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to The Tactical Traveler, the podcast where adventure meets precision and the journey is just as important as the destination. Bringing you the inside scoop on the most thrilling and efficient travel experiences. Each episode, we'll dive into the art of travel, from navigating off the beaten path destinations to mastering the art of packing like a pro. So buckle up, get your compass ready, and let's embark on a new adventure with Tactical Traveler. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tactical Traveler. I am back at you with another great episode and even better guest. Today, I have with me Neil Conlon. Did I say it right? I messed that up. How do you say it again?
It's all good. Conlon.
Dang it. I'm usually pretty good at names. And I'm excited to interview you today. You know, we have a common background as veterans. You're in a great group with me, the Vet Tribe. And you're a successful businessman who's traveled all over the world. I'm really excited to have you on the show because I believe that you can bring a lot of value to all the veterans and all the people that are listening to this podcast today. How's your day been going, man?
Good, man. I'm in Chicago today. I'm back on the road now that the masks have come off. And I really appreciate you, us being able to do this. I know we've been trying to do this podcast for a little bit now. And excited just to dig in with you.
Cool, man. Now, listen, I said, how's your day going? You said you're in Chicago. That does not sound like a good day. I'm from that neck of the woods.
Right. No, that's very fair. Very fair. No, I actually am having a great day. It feels good. One of my most comfortable places in life is traveling around. And so 2020 was hard for me in the sense of, I had to really slow down a lot of my travel. Now that we're kind of opening back up, it feels really good to be back on the road. I'm in a place that I do like Chicago overall as a good place to visit. So it feels good. And now we're doing a podcast.
Yeah. What are you doing up in Chicago?
You know, after being part of a bunch of different businesses and running different businesses in different roles, I got to a place about 2 or 3 years ago where I really felt drawn to helping small, medium-sized businesses. When you've run big sales organizations and large sales and marketing machines the way that I have, there's so much you learn that I just felt the responsibility to be able to go to a small business and explain to them these little tricks that you don't learn in a small business on how to improve your revenue and how to improve your sales and stuff like that. And so on top of a bunch of other entrepreneurial stuff that I do, I'm also a business coach.
Oh, nice.
I've been really committed to, like, if someone commits to my business coaching, I'm like, let's get me on a plane and let me come out and meet you. Let me spend time in your business. Let's see where we can help. And let's see how we can swing the door back and make sure that whatever hits people took in their business in 2020, they can recuperate through that, you know, in 2021 and beyond. So I'm here with coaching clients and some customers.
Oh, that's nice. Now, prior to COVID, because I mean, obviously for everybody, both corporate travelers as well as leisure travels was a nightmare. But on average, how many trips are you taking a year where you're helping clients or leisure? Or, I mean, if you're a business owner, they're all in quotes business trips, but we'll save that for later in the show.
Right. In 2018, I was on an airplane for 300,000 miles.
Oh, nice.
And 2019, I was on the plane for 400,000 miles. That's like a dozen trips around the planet per year. And what I would do for almost the whole entire year for both of those years, and I'd already been doing global travel and domestic travel before then, but those 2 years were committed to every Monday morning for the most part. I'd be home. My home base is New York City. I'd go into my office, meet with my executive team, learn whatever we were working on for the week. And most of the time by lunchtime or right after lunchtime, I'd be headed to the airport. I'd be on planes the whole entire week, planes, helicopters, boats, wherever. And this was global and domestic, speaking on stages or going and seeing clients and customers. And then usually trying to make it home by dinner on Friday, because my commitment to my 10-year-old daughter was I'll be home by dinner on Friday. And that included trips to Japan, included trips to India, trips all over the world. I try to keep them to a 4 or 5 day minimum. Obviously more than that, it'd be, you know, in a place for 10 days or 12 days or whatever it is. But I've definitely done my fair share of the mileage.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's an insane amount of mileage. Now, you know, take me through your journey. Have you always been a traveler, or is this something that developed over time out of necessity from being a coach? Talk to me a little bit about that journey and that process.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, the one thing that's funny about travel, going places, going places that are different from we're used to, is that it gives us a different level of perspective or awareness. And first time I went on an airplane, I was like, I don't know, 12. My grandmother took me to Ireland
for my good first trip.
First airplane trip. But my grandparents are immigrants. They all came either on a boat or a plane from Ireland. And my one grandmother took me back for a summer. My grandparents had played a pivotal role in me growing up. And there was constant, you know, throwing the kids in the car and going all up and down the East Coast to different states and different things. And I got kind of a bug at a very young age about understanding the like to go different places and experience different things. And then that carried over into my time in the Marines, where even in peacekeeping times, pre-9/11, I had done we call them a MEW, but, you know, a couple thousand Marines go on a aircraft carrier class type ship, and then spent a bunch of time in the Mediterranean. I lived in Japan, in Okinawa as a Marine. And then when I got out of the military and moved back to New York and was in corporate roles, when there was an opportunity for a need for people to go overseas, because we worked with a lot of overseas resources, I already had the experience of knowing what it's like to work with people in different cultures, different time zones, you know, all that stuff that you learn from travel. And as I've grown, then I grew into the startup space. And then I decided I was going to become a speaker and figured out how to get paid for speaking events. And the next thing you know, I'm running around the planet speaking in India and speaking in London and speaking all over the United States. I mean, at one point in that mix of the 2018-2019, I was on a speaker circuit and I was doing 4 cities a week.
Oh, and geez.
It was literally like I would wake up in some hotels and I would have weird deja vu and not even remember what city I was in. Because it would be like, get on the plane in New York on Monday morning and fly to Boston. Speak Tuesday morning at a conference, go right to the airport and fly to Chicago. Speak the next morning, go to the airport, fly to Boulder, Colorado, or Colorado Springs, speak, get on the airplane again, fly to Dallas, speak, and then be back home by Friday.
Right. And
you wouldn't know whether you're coming or going sometimes, but it's just amazing, amazing perspective and awareness. You learn how to live with less. You learn how to, you know, you learn a lot of gratitude. I would travel so much. I had trained myself to really just appreciate, you know, the opportunity that I had. And so when my flight got canceled or I got stuck in the airport or any of those things, you just learn to like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, and you may have not even have thought it through, but how much of what you do now is really the result of your grandma taking you to Ireland for a summer?
Oh, it is. The two things that come up for me there is one, you know, you don't real unless you look back retrospectively at the influence that you have at such a little young age, right? Like, you don't realize how much impact those years are when you're an adult. That was a huge impact. And the other thing that my grandparents taught me at a very young age, that my parents divorced when I was young, and my grandparents stepped in and were amazing. And they always like overcompensated a little bit. And they actually said to me over and over and over again, Neil, you can do anything that you apply yourself to. You can do anything. You can accomplish anything in this world as long as you really go for it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like what they didn't tell me, you know, in force was you gotta play by the rules. Neil, you gotta follow the process. Neil, you gotta do what everyone else tells you to do. They told me you can do anything you want as long as you focus on it. And that's really the life that I've carved out, is a life where how do you go from military veteran into corporate world, into startups, into business coaching. And I've never had a college class.
Right.
You know, like I coach a CEO right now of a $400 million a year company.
Hmm.
And I've never been in a college class, but I have a mindset and I have the authority and I have the background now to be able to do that. A lot of that has come from my grandparents and the perspective I have from all this travel I've done.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely an important part there, you know, and even a lot of people don't really get it, but just the mere fact of being in the military makes you into a person that can walk in that authority, that has been in really crazy situations. So even like the most dirtbag soldier can handle stress and conflict and, you know, all of that stuff, I think, you know, a lot better. And it puts them in a position where they could really look from the outside and coach in a way, if their heart's set on that kind of thing, to where they can say, is it really that bad? Let's think about this for a minute, you know, and they can really bring some good outside perspective. I mean, even if they were just eating crayons for 6 years.
right. Well, I've really leaned in on this new term that I've started to hear recently, this idea of mental fitness, right? And I think it's really interesting because we live in this age where, you know, we will spend, you know, people will sign up for a gym, right? We'll spend hundreds of dollars a month on a gym. We'll spend, you know, $50 to $100 a month on supplements and protein drinks and whatever else, probably a lot more than that. And we'll spend all this money on clothes, and all because we all want to look a certain way, right?
Come on.
And yet, you know, you can do all those things, and then something like COVID happens, or somebody loses their job, or somebody breaks up a relationship, or something happens financially, and you literally spent all that money on yourself, and you are no stronger because of it. You're just going to go off the rails.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that people don't recognize is that when you, I mean, for veterans, absolutely, right? Your mental fitness is the muscles of your mind are so much stronger than the average person. And that's really the way that I've started to look at you know, mindset is like, if you feel like you can't do something or you feel like you're not capable of something, it's just the fact that it's a muscle that just hasn't been flexed in a while, or a right. muscle that hasn't been developed yet. So, you know, I have built a career off of like identifying where the weak muscle is in your mind or in your business, and then putting in the consistent routine that will strengthen that muscle and that we can learn from it. And then once we know really how the mechanic of the muscle works, well, then you can actually put it in place.
Yeah. And that, you know, it's so important, you know, especially from a veteran perspective or a military perspective, about that idea of mental fitness. I don't know if they say it in the Marine Corps, but they say it all the time in the Army. Your body will quit long before your mind will, if you don't let your mind quit, type thing. And the whole idea is that we are able to endure so much more than we think, but it's usually that we, like you said, haven't just exercised it. So we quit before we really ever had to.
Right. I appreciate that you just said that. Here's an interesting thing that I learned a couple of years ago is, you know, our bodies operate, you know, off of electricity, right? Mm-hmm. We produce energy. I don't know the exact words, so I'm not the most savvy with my words sometimes, but like the amount of electricity that our heart produces is actually 33% more than the electricity that our brain produces, right? And that's where the relationship is between what your body, you know, it's like your body will go to a certain point, right? But your mind can then make the body go into autopilot,
right?
And that's why, like in the military, how, you know, military people are able to be physically fit and then train mentally to be able to go longer distances, swim further, climb more, do whatever they got to do. But what the driving mechanism behind that, right? Like this level of service or purpose, whatever you want to call it, that military veterans take on comes from the heart. And it's great to say that because it sounds cool and fun, but in knowing that the heart produces 33% more electricity than the mind does, that when your body's ready to quit and your mind's ready to quit, you can go to a place of like, I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my legacy. I'm doing this for my kids. I'm doing this for me. The heart will then push you even further.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because we're on this topic of mindset, if somebody's listening today and maybe they don't have the privilege or the advantage of coming out of a military background, because I have a mixed crowd that listens, what would you say is your top one or two books that they could pick up on mindset?
I think anything by David Goggins. Anything by David Goggins. Because he is such an extremist that even a couple sentences from that man's mouth implemented in your life could actually change some things. You know, I think the other thing is, I think anything by Brené Brown.
Yeah, man. She is really, really good in a very, very, very different way.
Right. Right. And I think like we're talking a little bit about mindset. We're talking about perspective. And I think one of the things that's most important is to recognize that like this level of mindset comes from, like, I say it like this. People often come to me because I have this like warrior mindset. And I think that there are lots of, and people will misinterpret because I'm this tattooed, bearded military veteran guy who's very forward and very leaned in and very conscious and very aware, that's what people need to subscribe to be like in order to adopt this warrior mindset. And I don't think that's true. I think that people need to just be able to adapt and overcome and step into this warrior mindset, whatever that is for you. There's so many different versions of it. You know, while David Goggins is running 200 miles in the desert, you know, in 3 days or whatever craziness he's doing in it now,
right?
You know, I think somebody like Brené Brown is a warrior in her own right in the way that she operates.
Yeah. Her material, man, is really good. Really. So for most military guys, we get the Goggins stuff pretty easily, right? I actually think that a lot of our brothers and sisters probably need to spend more time with Brené Brown to kind of balance out that mindset. Because she talks more, you know, a lot about that vulnerability, that there's strength in being vulnerable. And we both come from a community that you never let them see you bleed, right? And she really attacks that mentality and shows some deficiencies in that. I have found her stuff to be very challenging for me personally, on a personal level.
Totally. I completely agree with you. It took me, you know, I'll be super open and vulnerable. I'm in a place in my life where I feel comfortable to say that, right? In the military, one of the most amazing things about the military is that for whatever period of time you serve, you are, even on a day where you feel like shit, even on a day where you're hungover because you drank too much with your buddies last night, you are reminded by the uniform you wear that you serve in this capacity. Two, there is somebody during that day that is going to tell you that you are the best of the best of the best of the best. No matter what, everywhere you go, there is a sign, a flag, or something that's like you have a purpose. It is reinforced over and over and over again.
Yep.
And then when you get out of the military, it just goes away.
It really does.
It goes away. And then, you know, it's gotten a lot better. But it takes us so long to unpack that stuff. And then you pick up a book like something Brené Brown would write, and you start hearing words like boundaries and surrender and vulnerability. And these are all things that were, to military folks, were, you know,
dirty words
to us.
Yep.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
Yeah, I think I don't remember if I shared it on the podcast or not, but it was a very rude awakening for me when I got out. I did not serve during wartime. I was just after Desert Storm and got out before 9/11. And I remember getting out, and I had done airborne school, ranger school, air assault school. So, you know, I was doing a lot of that high speed stuff. And, you know, when they do, I don't know what the Marine Corps calls it, but they used to call it A-capping in the Army, which was your separation process. They're like, oh, man, your resume is going to look so great. People are going to want to hire you left and right. It's going to be, you know, you'll have no problems. And then I did my resume, and my first job, the guy was looking at my resume and he goes, what force did you serve in? Because I had Army Ranger on there. It was at that moment that I realized that from enlistment to ETS, I had been lied to. It's like, okay, this guy has absolutely no clue. I was not in any forest, you know? That separation is, and I mean, now you look at, I don't know how long you served. I did a short stint and got out and went to college. But you look at a guy that spent 10, 15, 20 years of his life serving, he only really in his entire adult life has lived one way. And then to get out and have to fundamentally change who he is. I mean, you look, so I worked for Special Forces for 20 years, right? And I watched these guys who were top one percenters in everything they did. And then they would get out and their choices were, do the same thing you did in the Army, but now as a contractor, unless you were an 18 Delta.
Right. Right. I'm currently coaching and have coached a master sergeant who just got out of the Marines after being in for 24 years and a commanding general who just got out after 20 years. And, you know, the crazy and amazing thing that I've learned, and I feel really grateful and blessed to experience this, right? I have this spectrum of coaching clients I also run a men's accountability group, which is just a place for men to be held accountable for things that they're working on and a place for them to just kind of unpack a little bit, right? A place because we're so busy being the head of household or so busy running our businesses and so busy doing all these things that sometimes we just need a place where we can vent and feel safe enough in order to be like, I just don't know what I should do next. And in these groups, I have everything from a man who works in his car, who lives in his car and works in his car so that he can live close enough to see his daughter every day, all the way up to CEOs and business owners of big companies.
Right.
And the amazing thing, and so wild, is that the commanding general or the master sergeant or the CEO of the company or the guy living in his car, we all experience the same problems. We all feel some version of uncertainty, some version of self-worth, some version of not being good enough to do the thing that we said we're going to do. And in the military serves an amazing purpose and does amazing things, and we have a responsibility and all those things, lots of positives. The crazy thing is that I'll just mention the master sergeant. You know, he is, for anyone who doesn't know, you know, a master sergeant is basically, you know, E8. I mean, you're basically at the top of the food chain in the military. You automatically have this amazing respect for the most part. And you've been doing the same thing over and over again for years. And then it ends.
Yeah.
And you
talk about an identity crisis, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And you immediately come out of this place where you basically, it's like you ate at the same restaurant for 24 years of your life. And every single day, the food was exactly the same. And it was paid for, you know, someone paid for it for you. You just had to walk in and do the work. And then all of a sudden it goes away. Poof.
Yeah.
It's just not the same anymore. So it's been an amazing journey to be able to share with men like this and other high performing men and men who want to be high performers and explain to them that they are not alone and that they are that feeling that they're maybe feeling for the first time, you know, like that they like surrender, like they need some boundaries in their life, like they need some vulnerability, like they need to unpack some shit in their life. They may be feeling it for the first time, but they're not alone in feeling that.
For sure. Now, what year did you get out?
I served 96 through early 2003.
Okay. So you were a part of the, you know, the invasion of Afghanistan then as a Marine. So you did what, 5 years? 5 years? 8 years?
Yeah, it's like six and change or something like that. So I got to experience the Marine Corps in both peacekeeping times and non-peacekeeping times. I got to see, you know, what it was like to do humanitarian stuff all over the world, and then getting to see what we operate like doing the thing that we're meant to do best anyway.
Yeah. So what do you think was your biggest struggle when you were transitioning from the Corps to civilian life? What was that like? What was that biggest transitional challenge for you?
You know, that's a really great question. I'm glad you're asking that. You know, I think the biggest transition, biggest challenge is what I've learned over time is I don't care whether you serve for 2 years, 4 years, 10 years, or 20 years. The amount of skills that the military is able to insert into people is amazing. And the leadership, the discipline, the consistency, mm-hmm. the resilience, all of these things, right? These leadership principles. The hardest part is to be able to extrapolate the skill and transition it into words and language that can be accepted into the corporate world or business world.
Right. So I don't know if you ever seen them, but it's like 30 memes, and they're all like office memes. It's military guys who have gotten out and then now are in a corporate setting. One of them was, it's got these two guys sitting there, and it's the military version is, "Bob, that is the stupidest damn thing I've ever heard in my life. You are literally robbing the oxygen from plants with your stupidity," right? And then it says the corporate version is, "Bob, I'm not really sure that's the best way we should approach this."
<You know>? Right.
Right. That stuff always cracks me up, because you're just sitting there and you've been in these, you know, upper echelon meetings, right? Even as a younger person in the military, oftentimes you're either the radio guy or you're the clerk or the, you know, or you happen to be the driver for the commander. And so you get pulled into these meetings and you hear the most wazoo stupid things. And in the military, people just like call that stuff out. Like, "That is the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life. What planet yeah. did you come from?" And then when you get into a civilian populace, you cannot be that direct. You cannot be that confrontive. It's a huge transitional challenge, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think it you know, I really like the fact that what you just said, right? Because the thing that was coming up for me to share with you was, you know, I think the military, no matter what your job is, at the military, at a minimum, will ensure that you have all the skills and resources to accomplish that task.
Yep.
Right. That is the bare minimum. I don't care whether you're driving a truck or all the way up to special forces or whatever it is. You'll have the minimum requirements. And, you know, something that our military does really, really well, and I've experienced this, is like, you know, if you were a platoon commander or a platoon sergeant at this type of unit at this type of place, you go to the other coast and you step into the same exact role, it's the same exact thing. We're great at scale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember I was out of the military for 5 or 6 years and I got a big corporate job. I reported directly to the global CEO of a company that had 16,000 employees globally, hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even close to $1 billion in their portfolio. And I'll never forget that I got the interview, and the recruiter who got me the interview sent me the cover of a business magazine with the guy I was going to interview for on the cover of the magazine. And I was like, this is, whoa, like mm-hmm. this is the guy, right? And, you know, long story short, I interviewed and, you know, worked for that company for a couple of years. And it was so funny because my boss would go and speak at a non-for-profit or a philanthropic thing or some charity ball, and everybody would be like, "Oh my God, he's the most well-known blanky person, a blankety this, a blanky that." And what you don't see is that behind that, this person had a personal driver, 3 assistants, right, a chief of staff, a speech writer, you know, yep. and you don't realize that it takes, so in the civilian world, it takes so much more effort and so much more resources in order for you to accomplish these things that people are trying to accomplish. When you're in the military, you've been taught the basic necessities to survive, and you have that sense of purpose, you just move differently.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. You know, one of the things that has always struck me as well is, you know, we're the military, regardless of what branch you're in. And even if you didn't serve and were in the Air Force, for example, there's always this leadership component that corporations look for. I don't know about you, but I always used to laugh because like half the stuff we pulled off was just by pure blind luck. Like it was not because we were this great leadership institution. It was that we had just the grit and the stubbornness to just get it done. And then when you get into the civilian sector, you start to look back and you're like, man, maybe we weren't really all that jacked up. You know? And I've always just found that really comical when I'm in corporate settings and I'm like, has nobody ever taught you guys how to do a backwards plan? Like, do you guys not understand that you have to like request supplies before you run an op? Like, this is such like common sense stuff to a military guy. But when you're in it, you're just laughing that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that stuff actually worked. You know? Do you find that as well? I mean, because you're consulting with all these big CEOs and you're doing this. I mean, tell me about that experience.
Well, I really like this question because I think the thing that I think is most interesting is what you're really talking about, right? Is, I mean, the military, Marines, we would call it, I don't know, what's the acronym, SMEAC, right? Situation, mission, execution, yep. Admin, command and control. And it just gets ingrained in us, right? To think that way because lives are potentially on the line. And we're in this very interesting time, I think, where what we consider resources is so different, right? Like there's people, I mean, like I joke around with people, I say right now in today's environment, the ability for a man to be able to understand how to start a fire is equally as important as understanding cryptocurrency.
Right.
Because they're both just forms of currency. The power grid might go off tomorrow. We've already experienced that. That's something that might actually happen. And if you needed, I don't mind being open. I laugh at young men who can barely change a light bulb, let alone start a fire. You know, but yeah. I also feel bad for men that are out there that are like working a 9-to-5 job and really trying to figure out their finances. And being like, I don't know, several months ago, all you had to do was buy like $200 worth of Bitcoin and you could have made $25,000. You just had to be paying it. You just had to be paying attention to it.
Or Doge or whatever it was.
Right. And so I'm not saying that you need to be super focused on these things, but are the way that we leverage resources is changing. And the way that so I think it's very important when I'm working with these business owners, people, because of our ego and because of our mindsets and all these other things, will be like, I have to sell or market this thing in this way or it's not going to work. And that's really not true.
Yeah.
And I just posted a testimonial on social media about one of my coaching clients who went from being in a really poor place, poor mindset, to doing $80,000 in commissions in one quarter and having a plan to take it to somewhere between 160 and 200,000 by the next quarter. Mm. And the way that we did that was changing her morning routine. All I did was change her morning routine and work effortlessly with her on how to change her morning routine so that her mindset was in a place that she was able to not be distracted by the things that were around. And then she was able to really focus on what she's trying to do. And then she built a pipeline.
Yeah. And that pipeline is so important, especially in the sales or the commission world. And if you're distracted and not able to keep that pipeline full, truth is that the commissions dry up.
Well, and the other thing is I look at everyone, we are all animals. And what I mean by that is like, we are all able to Pavlov dog ourselves. And what I mean by that is train ourselves to perform a certain way, right? Yep. And I was with one of my coaching clients this morning, and they were talking about like how clients are not feeling comfortable with the service because of vaccines and masks and stuff like that, and how things are going a certain way with certain customers and all this story stuff. And I said to as a response and a solution to this, what I said was, you know, we have this capacity, like all money does is give us more capacity to do something with time. My foundation of a piece of my business coaching is the only thing money, the only currency we really have is time. That is the only currency we have. The only thing that money does is it affords us the space to buy more time to do more things. What right. I mean by that is like, if you got to mow your lawn every Saturday and it takes you 2 or 3 hours to do it and you don't want to waste that time, what do? You pay someone to do it for you so you can get that right. time back.
Yeah.
And so you could spend the time listening to people complain about your services or complain about your business or, you know, give you shit for it. And I said to my client this morning, if you had 15 new clients lining up at the door trying to get your service right now, would you care about the 2 or 3 that are complaining about it? And the answer was no. And I said, well, which is a better use of your time? Go after new clients or to listen to the ones that are already complaining? And that's because of the capacity of and the mindset around being able to focus on people who are aligned with your business versus people who are energetically just spending and wasting your time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think especially in the context of a sales / commission driven business model, whatever that is, the easier solution is always just to bring in more volume. I mean, obviously, you've got to, if there's reoccurring issues, you've got to address them. And we've heard this before, I mean, from, you know, a wealth of different people. Money does not make somebody good or bad. It exposes whether they're good or bad. And money doesn't help or hurt a company in the context of their issues. What it does is it exposes those issues. And really, when you look at the process that you walk that person through, being able to focus them in on attracting ideal customers and getting away from the negativity, you know, again, money wasn't the solution, but it sure does help in the processes of us becoming aware of what's really important. Those people, like, you can find people complaining about everything.
Right, right, exactly. And it all comes down to the perspective and the awareness you build from that experience.
Yeah, yeah. That's good, man. Now, how many coaching clients do you have? How many are you taking? Talk to me a little bit about that and what that looks like in your life.
Yeah, so the programs that I run, there's a couple different versions of it. There's one-on-one business coaching. There is an accountability program, both women's groups and men's groups. I feel drawn to separate into the two different groups because I think it's just a different conversation. And so I run these accountability groups throughout the week. And then I run a physical in-person retreat program where once a month there's a 3-day retreat. I've run them all throughout COVID for the past couple of years. And in total, I think I've got, I mean, it's a mix of the one-on-one business coaching, one-on-one coaching, accountability groups, and the retreat program, more than a couple hundred people in the groups.
Nice.
You know, we meet weekly. You know, it's a place for men and women to check in and have someone kind of, I'll say, poke a hole in the thing that's getting in their way and see if it really exists or not. And then, you know, as travel has started opening up again, traveling around to businesses and helping them to come up with smart solutions and smart ways for them to create more revenue in 2021, because the way that people are buying things has started to change. And the process of that they think about for making purchases has changed. And then the other big thing that I'm starting to become more and more focused on is by the end of 2021, Amazon will have ownership of 40% of the e-commerce industry in the United States.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a huge thing for people to be conscious and aware of, because when something goes wrong or something has to edit or there has to be a change in the markets, if you're not paying attention, you won't see what's coming. And so one of the things I've been doing is building a plan to make sure that companies are aware of that and have products and services in place that they can continue to scale their revenue while not by while being aware of Amazon taking over just about everything.
Everything, man. They're doing TV now. They just bought out a major franchise. I mean, they've got groceries. They've got, it's definitely a monopoly. it's a monopoly of convenience, but, you know, they are definitely gobbling up tons of smaller entities and folding them into their process. And it has. It's changed the way we shopped. It's changed the way we've thought about acquisition of products and services. And I mean, Amazon's even in the context of the show is even dipping their toes into an online travel agency, an OTA like, an OTA like Expedia, where they would do discounted prices for their Prime members. I mean, they're in everything.
Yep. And I would say for anyone listening, what I think is amazing, something I'm coming across, though, is post 2020, I have a pulse on the markets because of the clients that I have and the access that I have to people. And, you know, these little, I'll say it like this. If you want Folgers coffee or you want Dunkin' Donuts coffee or you want K-Cups, Amazon is the perfect place to go for those things. But what it's also done is created a amazing premium marketplace where people really do like, small batch things and, small batch premium coffees and small batch premium alcohol and, experiences. Especially post 2020, if you're running a business and customer service has become so important and providing a solid experience is a masterful way to really do an amazing thing. I just ordered coffee from somebody the other day who's in one of the Vetrepreneur Facebook groups that I belong to. And, the coffee showed up. It had little gifts, little trinkets included in it. It had a handwritten note from the guy. And I was like, this customer experience is such an opportunity because Amazon cannot compete with that premium service. And so right. I've been sharing with a whole bunch of my customer base that you're wondering about keeping your clients or how do you not get distracted by this? I'm like, you got to go all in on customer service and customer support and the experience.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like that, that old cliche, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. If you took that and you applied that to your customer service kind of idea or vision for your customer service department, that's really what you're saying.
Yep, absolutely.
Which was that, Jose, by the way?
Yeah, that is absolutely.
Yeah, I see him popping in there and doing his coffee thing, and I'm like, oh man, cool. And I'm a total coffee junkie, so I was like, it had to be Greg or Jose. I was like, okay, which one is that?
Yeah, I mean, I as somebody, I really try to support small businesses, right? And I want the mom and pop coffee shop. I want to use the little bakery, the butcher, everybody, right? But living in New York, it's not that easy to do that when you live in New York because there's a lot of bigger businesses. And right. It is such an amazing customer experience to get that level of service to where you're getting a handwritten note. It's coming it was immediately boxed up once the order went through, and all the little bits and pieces that, you know, that level of delight, you know, I've heard people say this before, and I agree with it, is like, there's more room in your customer's mailbox than there is in their inbox.
Right.
And if you can send somebody something, I'll just share one other thing that I think is useful in that, you know, one of my really, really good friends just wrote a book called Rise and Shine. And I bought 10 copies of the book. I'm reading the book now. It's a really great book. It's about men's masculinity and in modern day. And I wrote notes and sent it to 9 other men. And in it, I said, if you find this book from my friend Bo to be as helpful and guiding as I do, I hope that you will buy 5 copies of the book, and that you'll share it with 5 men in your universe. Because I'm really trying to support these small businesses and early stage authors, but also because of the impact of that, right? The impact of that is amazing. And I think that one thing that Amazon is going to create is that now these small batch businesses, this customer service, this attention to detail, this honoring the chain and keeping it going, this mental fitness or this intentionalness to be like, I'm sending you this book, 1, because I care about you, 2, because I think it'll help you, 3, if you agree with me on any of those things, you should do the same thing. It's right. Really going to be a powerful transition that I'm excited for.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. That's good support too. So what do you, well, really, I want to do too. So I read an article not too terribly long ago about how COVID has fundamentally, for lack of better language, destroyed New York City. And not like on a health level, but on a financial level. Because as people began to telework, companies saw that their productivity didn't really drop off that much. And the article was really talking about that New York City has become almost a ghost town. Now that we're kind of pulling out on the other side of that, is that what New York City is still like? Do you see that as a future reality that these companies are going to end up fleeing New York? Because, you know, obviously it's far more expensive to be in New York than, let's say, Florida. Talk to me about that experience, and then I'll ask you a different question here in a minute.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. You know, the way that I look at all of these things is I use a term, what I call this is reshuffling of the deck. And what I mean by that is, if you do you remember when the Kindle came out? When the Kindle first came out, they were like, it is the end of books for everyone. No right. book is ever going to live ever again. And everybody got a Kindle. And then everybody who had a most of the people who had a Kindle were like, I actually don't like this that much. Mm-hmm. And then they realized that they could read news off of a Kindle because you could download your Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, whatever it is, and read the news in black and white because it was as black and white as the newspaper was. And then people realized that when they were reading stuff about mindset or fiction, it just felt better to touch paper, right?
Yeah, it really does.
And then everybody got a Kindle and got books, right? Barnes and Noble couldn't compete with that. So they lost a lot of bookstores, but now all these little artisan bookshops have popped up again. And that took a couple of years, right? The deck of cards kind of reshuffles itself, right? And, you know, I think as that pertains directly to your question about COVID in New York and other cities, like technology is doing this amazing thing now where like these big cities, as somebody who has lived in big cities, they're not the most healthy thing in the world for us, right? We become stationary. We don't eat enough of the right foods. We don't get enough travel in. We don't get enough perspective. We don't get enough awareness. We start to get provincial almost. And I think that what COVID sent many people you know, back into the woods and back into the country and back into nature and all these different things. And so I think we're going to go through this period of time. It's going to take us equally as long. It's going to take a year, year and a half for the deck to reshuffle itself, but we're going to find different ways to figure out what that looks like. I mean, like, nobody, you know, the funny thing about, I mean, there's brand tied to every city, right? Every city's a brand. You know, you go to Florida for the beach, you go to New York for the bagels or whatever the thing is, right? The pizza, right? Everything's a brand. But like, if you were to talk about New York City and be like, hey, we're going to take about 5 miles of an island, and we're going to shove 9 million people into it, and we're going to make it super expensive to live, and we're going to make it congested. We're going to make, if you were to describe it like that, nobody would want to live there.
Right.
You know, but you could do the same thing about Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I think we're just going to go through a reshuffling of the deck and see where it turns out.
Yeah. Interesting. So what's coming up next for you? I mean, you have had just a plethora of experience and businesses and all this stuff. What's next?
You know, right now, I'm really focused on this giving back. Through my knowledge and experience, I recognize that in order to have done the things that I've done in such a short span of time, that took a lot of effort, work, whatever you want to call it. I'm really committed to empowering people as much as I can. I'm working on the book that now will have a lot of those tips, tools, and resources. And the book's called Step Back and Kneel. And the book is about discernment. There's been many decisions that I've made in my life that at the time I thought was a bad thing, or I made a bad choice or a bad decision. And if I can share with people anything that is of value, it really comes down to that some of those choices will lead you to the amazing things on the other side of it. And what, there really is no bad thing or good thing in this life, but what we're learning constantly is discernment. So I'm working on the book, working on the coaching, working on the retreat program. And then, you know, I'm actively investing, advising, shareholder in a handful of companies.
Man, dude, you do not stop.
No, that is true.
It's like, holy cow, man. Hey, man. So what's your next vacation?
There's vacations?
Yeah, there should be.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. This is a good question. The next vacation, well, the next travel spot is going to be, I've got some travel coming up, going to see some guys that I served in the military with in Florida in a couple of weeks. I'm also big into hiking. And so we'll be doing some stuff out in California in the mountains there towards the end of the summer as well.
Oh, cool. Cool. Good deal, man. So if somebody would be interested in reaching out to you, contacting you for coaching, what would be the best way for them to get a hold of you and to really pull from this immense pool of knowledge that you have?
Yeah, I really appreciate that statement. I'm on all the social media channels. It's at I am Neal Conlon, NEALCONLON. My website's www.neilconlon.com. I'm usually answering most of my DMs across the channels, and feel free to reach out. If nothing else, I will promise to show up in a meaningful way for a conversation and support the person in any way that I can.
Oh, man. That's great, dude. That's great. Well, it has been a real privilege talking with you. I've loved the conversation today. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule and away from the beautiful city of Chicago to spend some time with me, and look forward to watching your journey and seeing what's next with you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate making the time for this podcast. I know we ran long, but it was great.
Good, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review to keep the adventure going. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll continue to explore the world tactically. Until then, keep your itineraries tight and your travel spirits adventurous. Safe travels, and see you next time on Tactical Traveler.